Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. I'm Tammy Haddad. Welcome to this special AI for the Holidays edition of the Washington AI Network podcast with Pinterest. Here at the Residence of Ireland, the home of the Irish ambassador, the great Geraldine Bernaysen. Everyone is enjoying your incredible Irish hospitality and more Irish whiskeys than I knew existed.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Geraldine Bernaysen of Drogheda, County Louth. I'm saying that for a specific reason, because there's someone here tonight who knows about Drogheda and who described my hometown as an AI leadership hub. So I'm very impressed by that. But not that I would expect most people to recognize my hometown in those terms. I'm Ireland's 19th ambassador to the United States. Agus tá honar hirs orm gúil sibh in Armagh an ocht. Tá cead míle fáilte romhaibh. I'm delighted you're all with us. 100,000 welcomes to you here to our part of Ireland, the residence of the Irish ambassador to the United States. One of the questions I'm often asked as an ambassador is, what do I spend my time doing most? What do ambassadors do? And traditionally, of course, the straight answer to that is that I try and work on issues from Ukraine to the Middle East, to Irish citizens' concerns, to ensuring that there's FDI going into Ireland. And did I mention that Ireland is the fifth source of FDI into the United States? All of that is part of my daily menu. But I can be absolutely frank and say that there's a one issue that pervades everything I do now, and it's AI. Frankly, it's whatever the thematic focus of the work we do, whether it's political, economic, cultural, regulatory, the defining issue of our time, really, in many ways, has become AI. So the idea that we're all gathering here from a very mixed background, some of us are politicians, some of us diplomats, many of us involved in the industry, I'll speak about our partners in a moment, it really shows that the nature of AI is affecting everything we do and is weaving itself through the great tapestry of all of our challenges, our socioeconomic challenges, as well as our political ones. And as a diplomat, I also believe that AI is offering us opportunities for sure, and also creating some challenges and tensions in our relationships. And I think that's something that we'll have an opportunity to explore a little bit this evening as we go. You're in, as I said, sort of Ireland House here tonight. And I wanted just to say that I think that's quite a poetic, appropriate place to be. Ireland likes to believe that we have something of a creative genius. You've all heard of Joyce, Yeats, and Hozier. I'm inclined to think that in 50 years, whoever stands here in my job is going to be speaking of a Sam Altman type, because I think also of AI as the new creative frontier. And I hope that as a European, we certainly are interested in innovation and competition, as well as what sometimes is attributed to us as a regulatory instinct. But I know that others will explore that issue with you this evening. So I wanted to say, above all, Gaurav Mila Mahagav, thank you very much to our partners here this evening, to my dear, dear friend and the legendary Tammy Haddad, AI Network, Washington. I have to say that the first time Tammy told me about this network, to be honest, it wasn't quite clear to me what your intention was, but the perspicacity of your starting this network is really, really extraordinary, Tammy. And I know that you have opened up the understanding, but also that mix, because of the nature of AI and the fact that it's affecting all of our societies and all of our economies, you've allowed us access to an area that might otherwise have been owned by technical geniuses. So we're very grateful to you. That doesn't in any way denigrate the geniuses sitting right beside you there. So I want to say a huge thank you to our friends from Pinterest. We're very honoured to have Pinterest proudly in Dublin. You're going to hear very soon from the chair of the Irish Parliament's AI committee, Malcolm Byrne. Same name, but no relation that we know of, right, Malcolm? Just so we know.
It's a popular name.
Well, I was about to say it was the High Kings of Wicklow. So we're certainly delighted that you're here with us, Malcolm, and honoured that you will say a few words.
Geraldine, thank you very much. And I'm delighted to be here this evening. I'm really appreciated to be introduced by, and she is a legend, Geraldine Bernaysen. She is a superb diplomat who served this country in so many roles. But I think in Ireland, it needs to be said that we do appreciate all the work that you and your team do. We're really, really grateful. And thank you for hosting us here in your home this evening, Geraldine. As Geraldine has said, there are huge opportunities and challenges with AI and indeed the convergence of AI and other technologies. And for us as legislators, it's critical that we inform ourselves, that we partner with industry as well in informing ourselves. We have a responsibility to our citizens to ensure, you know, that they're engaged in the topic, that they're protected, but also that they're able to avail of the opportunities that this new technology provides. In the context of what we're looking at doing for this government, in our programme for government, we made a major commitment around AI and digitalisation. So the Irish government, we appointed a minister for artificial intelligence for the first time. There was specific focus given within the Department of Enterprise to looking at rolling out AI. There were public service guidelines towards the effective and safe use of AI within the public service. And there was talk then about setting up a parliamentary committee on artificial intelligence, for which I argued. And our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, was supportive, but there's always a debate about how many committees we have. Well, I credit Emmanuel Macron, the French president, for allowing it to happen, because the Taoiseach went to Paris and met with President Macron. And President Macron talked all about it, and the Taoiseach came back and was even more enthused about this new technology, and at every meeting started to talk about it, to the point that one of my colleagues texted me and said, would you ever get him to stop talking about that that A1 thing that you're always going on about? So we are moving in the next year to set up a national AI office, overseeing, you know, some of the elements of the AI Act. But the intention of the office is not that it will be a thou shalt not office. The idea is that it's to be an enabler, particularly for small business, for civic society organisations, to support them in using AI and more effectively. We intend to set up an AI observatory, and that is to provide evidence-based research. So if we're looking at job displacement in a particular sector, what do we need to do to be able to respond to that? We will be holding, during Ireland's EU presidency in the second half of next year, an AI summit in October, which I hope many of you come. There will be a particular focus on ensuring that all of our citizens are skilled for the age of AI, and a real focus on upskilling. And indeed, the Minister for Further and Higher Education very shortly will be announcing an AI skilling, which will be a programme, primarily of online programme, available free, supported by the state, of short courses to introduce all citizens to AI, ranging from basic literacy right the way to advanced usage. I'm very flattered and I'm delighted that Congressman Jay Rinalty has come here to join us along with his wife, Heather. I had the privilege of meeting with the Congressman yesterday, and I think people need to realise the leadership that you've shown in this country on this issue. Certainly for the work of our committee, it's been something that has inspired us. The fact that you've been able to work in a bipartisan way, I think, is critically important, because this technology will transform all of our lives in so many ways in every sector. And to have your leadership in that regard, I was certainly very appreciative of it. And it's certainly something that my committee wants to continue to work with those in Congress who have an interest in this space. I have gone on for far too long. If there was an LLM here, it would be telling me at this stage it's definitely time to wrap up. But just to say, certainly on behalf of my parliamentary colleagues, again, Thank you very much for hosting us here. Thank you to the Washington AI Network and to Pinterest. And I hope that coming out of this evening, that we are all able to avail of the possibilities of AI and other technologies, and that the partnership between Ireland and the United States, the long-running partnership in this space, will continue to prosper. Gairmeoirí.
First of all, Madam Ambassador, thank you again for having us here. Honored to be here. Will everyone else join me in thanking her so much? Malcolm, loved hearing your words. Love you talking about Congressman Arbonotti and Heather. So good to see you. And Pinterest, it's so great to be here with you. You have inspired all of us in so many ways. I'm thrilled to be joined by our special guest from Pinterest, Malik Dukar, Chief Content Officer of Pinterest. Let's hear it for him. And Jeff Carell, Vice President of Engineering. So great to meet you. Okay, Malik, I want to start at the beginning. Tell us about how AI has changed everything for Pinterest. Really, you guys kind of started with AI.
Yeah, well, first, let me say we're so excited to be here in your company and the company of this esteemed room. So thank you. And I'll go back to the beginning. AI for the last decade has always been critical to Pinterest to help surface the right piece of content to the right user at the right time. Now, in the past 3 years, I'd say that generative AI has really accelerated that connection between content and users in really significant ways, and are leaning into AI to be positive and inspirational for our users to surface not only the right content, but surface content that helps users to feel inspired, helps users to do things, to go out into the world and bake, cook, buy, shop, shape their lives versus using AI to drive more sort of like mindless type of engagement. You know, the time spent on platforms is one thing, and often platforms that are out there that optimize for time spent. We use AI to optimize for time well spent, especially when that means leaving the platform to go out into the world inspired by something that you saw on the platform.
Well, one of the things that I find so startling, I have to say, is how simple it is. This sounds so promotional, but I don't mean it that way. But how simple it is to shop on Pinterest now. It's always been pretty easy, but my whole life is different because I can do that. Now, should I be thanking you, Jeff, because you're engineering?
I think it's a thank to the entire team.
Okay, the entire team. But let's start with you. Yeah. How do you figure that out? Because it's so interesting. We talk about AI a lot in Washington and how it's going to change your life. But this is a dramatic way now that regular people won't look at AI like it's something out there for these elites, but it's something that I'm using. So how do you look at it and decide exactly how to do it?
I think for us, this is where AI has really come in and allowed us to accelerate what we can do from our mission. We want to be the visual discovery platform. And even early on, part of that inspiration that we have, part of that motivation was to allow using AI to understand what's in the image. Right. And I think that's where it starts, because if we can understand the context of what's in the image, naturally we can understand the products in the image. But then we can also start to understand and infer things like the vibe of the image, like what's the feel. And so then those things give people the words that, like, they help identify the products. You know, I know that look. I saw that person wearing something. I don't know what it's called, but now you can easily find out what it is.
Right.
And so the AI journey has really been about enabling users to better find the words, find the products that they're looking for, and actually take action on that inspiration.
It's funny you should say that, because I do think that's another gift of AI. It gives you a definition that you didn't have, right? And that's what you're thinking about when you're deciding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All around the world, every single day, you know, we're hearing about open source. How do you pick up that and pull it into what you're doing? Or do you just look and say, hey, we're doing it better than everyone else, or we figured it out more?
I think for us, it's a mix. So there's times where we're pulling from open source. There's times where we're looking at what we can build ourselves. And there's times where we're leveraging, you know, what's already off the shelf out there from other providers. And we've actually seen really good results where, to your point in the beginning, you know, we began our journey with AI, right? So a lot of the foundational models that power very low-level things like retrieval and the personalization in our systems, effectively our taste graph, like those end up being...
Wait, what's a taste graph?
the Taste Graph is what powers all the personalization.
Oh, right? So did you name it? I like that.
We did name it, yes. I didn't personally name it. The Taste Graph is effectively what powers a lot of the engine under the hood, right? It's the connections we have. There's 80 billion connections on all these likes and the people and the images and the boards. And it allows us to know you are not the same as the person sitting next to you. You have different style, different personalization aspects. And so this allows us, the more you use the platform, to understand what those are. Mm-hmm. And that's one example, right? That's off the shelf. We built that as our own models. And that's great because that's amazing. And it's very unique to us. But then there are other cases where with something like Pinterest Assistant, we just announced it. So if we take this great world that we have a visual like inspiration and we want to actually build and tap into modern AI with it, that turns into how do we actually leverage it? Do we want to be sort of a standard like text box for that? No, because that doesn't go with what we want. And so we've actually pulled in the ability with AI to converse with Pinterest at this point. You know, it acts more as a stylist, as a personal shopper. And models like that are ones where we're leveraging the knowledge that's available through open source, but then customizing it for Pinterest.
So you're saying that you're looking around at all the open sources and you're saying, oh, I can pull from this, I can pull from that. And we do this in our pocket.
Correct.
That's amazing.
Pick the right tool for the right time.
Right? Yeah. Pick the right tool for the right time. I like that. Okay, but Malik, you've got all of these people coming in. How do you decide what you emphasize? Like yesterday, I was looking at some incredible things and I thought, wow, this could change my life. I'm going to hold on to this, but I want to be these three other things. I guess this says more about me. I feel like I'm in therapy or something. And that is the point because it is so personal. So safety gets involved in all of this too. I know people can safely look at what other people do, but how do you draw that line between what others are doing and what you get access to?
First thing I'd say is what you're saying is spot on. One common refrain that we hear a lot from users is that, and it's almost unquotable, Pinterest gets me. Pinterest understands me. So to Jeff's point, when people save content to their boards or when they make collages, those associations and those signals help us to surface the right content for the right user at the right time. One area where we leverage AI a lot to help understand people is to almost be a mirror on the screen to what people see of themselves. So we've invested in inclusive AI tools so that folks can, let's say we have a hair filter tool where you have a certain type of hair and you want to see certain outfits with people who have that hairstyle, you can filter by hair pattern, you can filter by body size and shape, you can filter by skin tone so that Pinterest gets you from a visual standpoint and can reflect who and what you are. To your question about safety across all of this, we know that these technologies are incredibly powerful. AI is really the defining technology of our lifetimes, and I think that is spot on. That is key. How AI is used, how companies and platforms like ours lean into AI to leverage it for safety. We invest in trust and safety to keep the platform a safe place for our users so our users can trust the results that they're seeing is something that we're very much dedicated to.
And Jeff, how do you do that? How do you test to make sure things are safe?
I would say it starts maybe twofold. One is making sure the content we're getting into the platform is adhering to our policies, our guidelines, which, you know, try to enforce what we deem as safe and positive. So there's a lot of work, even from an LLM AI perspective, as to how do we understand the content? How do we make sure we're getting the right content? Beyond that, though, you know, even cases, again, I mentioned Pinterest Assistant a second ago, even there, then it turns into making sure we have the right usage patterns. When we were building that, actually, we imposed two constraints up front. We do not make it available to people under the age of 18, right? Easy one out the door. And then additionally, in building it, as I mentioned, we're a visual discovery platform. So we put in guardrails around that. You cannot ask the assistant, what time is it? Or any other arbitrary question you can come up with. You can ask it, help me find styles like this, or, you know, I like that look. Can you find it over in this vertical? Those types of restrictions, if you will, like guardrails up front, both provide a very clear experience to our users, but also a very safe one.
So when you created the assistant, do you think male, female? I know more women use Pinterest than men, but I mean, do you look at it from a gender point of view at all? You know, I would want an assistant that does everything and wanted to be whatever I wanted them to be in the moment, right? Yeah. Read my mind. But how do you actually design it?
This is where the Taste Graph comes back into play.
Did everyone else know about the Taste Graph? Who knew? Okay.
Now we have Spacegraph.
There you go.
But like a matching algorithm.
It sounds Savala, like a matching algorithm. She's a pro.
It sounds like a matching algorithm.
Yep.
We can talk later, yes.
Okay.
But yes, it's effectively your personalization engine, right? We map and understand your tastes. And so, you know, quite frankly, whether you're male or female, to your point, is almost irrelevant at that point. What your personalization, what your tastes are, matter more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how do people share safely? Do you have to agree? The other person has to agree to share.
Yeah, it differs. So the overall answer is yes, the people have to want to have a connection. Where we have a very clear bar is with youth. So we don't allow sharing or engagement for under 16. And we were the first platform to do that because we thought it was not safe, you know, at that age range. And then as you get older, I would say it's more about like collaboration, positive engagements where people are creating and collaborating on boards. Let's say you're designing a home together or designing an outfit or decorations in your family and you all want to, you know, pitch in with ideas. That's the type of collaboration and engagement that we have on the platform. You know, I think oftentimes Pinterest is called a social media platform because it's online and a platform that people go to. And it really isn't. It has social elements to it, but it's actually a little bit more of a search platform meets commerce. People come to Pinterest to find things and to actually then go out into the real world and do it. So we don't optimize for time spent, which is really what social media does. Social media makes more money when it optimizes for time spent. We optimize for actionability and getting people to where they want to go to, inspiring them with ideas, but then helping them find it in the real live world.
I was thinking this weekend, Perplexity had this experiment with shopping. Did anyone notice this? And I realized they're really trying to imitate Pinterest. Buy this here. You can look at this. Are you nervous about ChatGPT and Pinterest and Claude and all those?
What I would say is we are trying to be the best Pinterest possible.
They're trying to be you. I think that's what you're saying, right?
I don't know who's trying to be whom. But we truly are trying to be the best Pinterest that we can be. Like when a user comes to Pinterest, they are in a leaned in posture. They're not in a passive, lean back, mindlessly scroll. And it's because that is what we optimize for. We optimize for actionability. People come to Pinterest to do things. And we are working on experiences, features, and content that really delivers on that.
People are paying attention.
People are paying attention.
Okay, I have to ask this. I'm going to start with you, Jeff. Synthetic content, misinformation. We all know what it is in the room.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
So a few things. Actually, I'll give you a fun stat we have. We've been doing a lot of work on our side to understand and to be able to label imagery that's been generated, right? One of the interesting data points that we've had as we've been training our models on this, and you know, there's a human in the loop to understand the accuracy of these things, is that for any given time a user rates a item as generative AI created, there's a 50% chance they're accurate. Think about that for a minute. It's 50% of the time they're rating it, and it could be a very beautiful image that looks completely generated. It just happens to be a beautiful image. Or it could be something that looks very normal, but it actually is fake. And so this has been an interesting challenge that we've had. We need to understand and process in our own terms, like, what is actually generated or not. And where we're falling on this is a little bit more of perceived generative AI versus actually generative AI. A fine line, but an interesting one to a baseline against our users' values or users' interests at that point. But then with that in mind, we're aware that generative AI is not good nor bad. It's just generative AI. It's up to the user at that point. And we want to give the users agency. And so we actually just released this. We allow them to, based on different categories, say, you know, I want to see generative AI in this. I don't want to see it in this.
Sometimes
it's useful, right? Like, great example that I love, hairstyles. Hairstyles can be completely amazing looking or completely like hair doesn't work that way. On the other hand, like things like wallpapers on Pinterest are very popular and generative wallpaper are amazing. So it's very use case, very personalized driven at that point.
Malik, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would add, I'll click into the hairstyle example because I think it's a really interesting one. There are some users who want to see the fantastical hairstyle that doesn't follow the rules of physics and gravity because that might push in the real world what they're able to design and do. But there may be another user who wants to see hairstyles that follows the rule of gravity because they want to replicate it maybe a little bit more directly. So really enabling the user's agency and choice, I think, is really key in this. And in the way that AI technology is neither bad nor good, I also believe that AI content is neither bad nor good. I do think that honoring the creator, supporting the human in all of it is really key. And what I mean by that is humans, people are using AI to create ideas or share or bring their ideas to fruition in ways that they couldn't do before. And I think that's a really positive thing. Movies did not exist until the technology for motion pictures came in, and then creators were able to use that. And today we all watch movies. So what might creators and humans do with the technology there? All that said, at the same time, continuing to invest in the safety and the trust around that so that we don't see abuses and weaponization and all of that at the same time. Both need to be true.
Do you like what other companies are doing? I mean, are they working with you on these safety issues? Do you have any good partners other than some of the folks in the room? Oh, there he is, this gentleman over here, the Family Safety Office. I mean, are you getting a lot of cooperation on those issues? Because I have to say, Congressman Obernote is here, people in D.C., other than this fine gentleman and great legislator, they're not talking about responsible AI that much. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is one of the big reasons why we're so excited to be engaged in this forum, because we think that this conversation needs to happen much, much more. And we don't go it alone. Like even, you know, when I mentioned earlier, the inclusive AI feature sets that we put out that allow people to filter, you know, hairstyle, body shape and size. We don't sit in a room by ourselves and just come up with that. We listen to our users. We work with creators. We work with third parties and other groups. Another industry consortium that we've been involved with is the one that Cloudflare started, where Cloudflare is working on basically standards for crawling, bots that crawl sites. You know, a bot can crawl a site to help make that content more discoverable, or a bot might crawl a site to grab content for data-hungry models, and maybe they had permission, maybe they didn't. We truly believe that there are good use cases there.
Well, how do you handle that?
Well, from a Pinterest standpoint, and one of the reasons why we were one of the only platforms to sign up for Cloudflare's effort is we want to protect creators in this. We want to protect users. We don't want folks to put content on Pinterest and then Pinterest gets crawled and that content
right.
is taken and ends up in models. So we're really working to be, you know, good actor, but also have that industry level impact.
Do you think younger people feel safer than older people with this technology now? Who do you think worries about it more? Or when you're deciding the policies, how do you look at that from an age point of view?
I'm not so sure.
Jeff is like, what's she saying?
I'm going to let Malik answer that
one. Yeah, he's very happy you're answering that. Well, because I'm just saying, if every study, young people look at this technology differently, just like they text and are afraid to talk to people on the phone versus older people.
We're investing from a youth standpoint, really making sure that our youth, 14, 15-year-olds, for example, on the platform are safe and don't have some of the communication right. features that we, you know, talked about earlier, don't have access to that. But I think the bigger thing that we're doing is really platform-wide, and that is focusing on leveraging AI to surface content that drives better well-being. And we do this in our algorithm, mathematically in the system. When our algorithms are at a crossroad and it's one piece of content that might keep a person longer but make them not feel good, or another piece of content that will have them leave the platform to go do it and have them feel better, our systems choose the latter, not the former. So that focus on how we surface content that focus on our policies, what we allow, what we don't allow. That has actually been foundational to our growth. It's not been doing that in contrast or opposition to our growth. It's actually been the reason why we've grown as a platform. And to your question specifically, where we've grown the fastest is with the youngest generation. Gen Z is actually now more than 50% of our user base and use the platform at a greater rate than the older generations, which actually defies platform logic, because typically as a platform gets older, the younger people want to leave. If I'm on it, my kids don't want to be on it. We're actually seeing the opposite happen. As we get older, we get cooler. And I'll tell you, if we as executives and team members sat in a room and said, how can we be cool for young people? How can we be cool for Gen Z? Let's do that. We would absolutely fail.
Right.
What we did was, how can we make the platform a safer, better, healthier space? And that has actually been the reason for our growth, especially in a sea of toxicity of what a lot, not all, but what a lot of the internet has become.
But if you see the behavior, to what Malik was just saying, we're seeing growth. And it's not about safe or not. It's just about it's a better place. That's where a lot of Gen Z is they appreciate the positivity. They appreciate the feeling they have when they come here. And so I think that the behavior is outweighing what we may or may not hear otherwise.
Right. And open source helps that. I know you guys talk about open source a lot.
Yeah.
It gives you different kinds of AIs to choose from.
I think it's a little bit more of an efficiency play and a relevance play. If we can be more efficient, we can be more relevant, whether we pick an open source model or not, or we build our own or use something off the shelf, that allows us to move faster and build more features for our users that bring the positivity, the inspiration that we're looking for.
Amazing.
Means
to an end. Okay, I have two questions I ask every guest, including Jensen Huang. I'll tell you his answer later. Okay, Jeff, you're up first. What is your favorite AI? You can't say your company. What is your favorite AI? What do you use the most? Yeah, ChatGPT.
It'd be Gemini.
Gemini.
Yeah.
Gemini. Malik?
We're just talking about this in the car. Gemini.
Gemini. Okay. You guys answered the same question. The second question is, what is your favorite prompt? What's your go-to? What really helps you?
So mine, hands down, I don't like cooking. Every week, my wife asks me, what should we make for dinner?
Wow.
I may be very opinionated about what I eat, but if someone asks me that question, I immediately draw a blank.
Oh,
perfect for AI.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Help me plan my meal. It gets very elaborate, right?
Right.
7-day prep, sort by the aisle.
Oh, yeah,
in the
too
store.
Much info. Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. Malik, what about you? Your favorite prompt?
It's a general category versus a specific prompt, but I've got one weird hobby. Maybe more than one, but one of my weird apps. I like to CAD design and do 3D printing, and I make quirky little games.
Oh, yeah, I saw all that stuff. You make everything. Well, I was on your board. Sorry.
Oh.
It feels personal to say that, but I'm oh my God, look what he could do.
On the side, I've also been playing guitar for the past few years.
I saw that too. I wasn't going to bring it up.
So I've actually used AI to brainstorm with me on my creative hobbies. And with the guitar, a song I wrote, it was a note I was trying to land on and I couldn't get it. And I gave the machine my song and asked it to fill in the blank for a note, and it hit the note that I was going for. And then the other example is with my 3D printing. It was a breakthrough I was trying to get to on a design that I sketched it out by hand, uploaded it, and it gave me something that was actually 90%. I'm pretty sure I would have arrived at it, but it might have taken another month or two.
So you had a lot of extra time there. Well, that's great. The gift AI. Yeah, it's incredible. You really have to go to Pinterest board and look at all that. It was crazy. And it reminded me of Al Gore. I remember Al Gore was the first one to talk about 3D printing. We're all like, yeah, buddy. Anyway, thank you both so much. Aren't they terrific? Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.